The wait is over. We are back once again for the 154th installment, Parish of the Patriots. Grandpa Dan right here with you. I'm really glad you joined us this week. If you're new, you haven't been by, this first time listening, in for a treat. It's always a fun show. We do have a Christian-specific message. See, there's a reason the name sounds kind of, you know, churchy. Parish of the Patriots, you know. We do have a Christian-specific message later on the show. Runs around the halfway mark. Even if you're not a Christian believer, highly suggest you tune in. You might get something out of it. If not, hey, you do you, fam. Like I say, it's 154th installment of the show. Always start off reminding everybody, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Show is supported by the voluntary support of you, the listeners. There's nothing, there's no extra content behind a paywall or anything like that. What you see is what you get. And, you know, no ads. It's a lot of things to enjoy. So, you know, even if it's just once a month, even if it's just a couple of dollars, I don't expect you to bankrupt yourself here. Just a few bucks. It is very much appreciated. It goes a long way. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. We got Monero. All that information's at the bottom of the description page. You can find it down there. Got an email address down there. Join, drop your notes. And if you happen to have another cryptocurrency, you can drop me an email. More than likely, I can get you an address for that. And having said that, let's get into the listener supporter mailbag. Always a fun part of the show. It's short this week. Won't spend a lot of time with it. GPD, pray for the blessing of God to shine down on you. That's from Mr. T. And yeah, I do very much appreciate it. Grandpa Dan, and before I get into the heart of what I'm going to read, the first couple of things, I of course obviously got that information. And yes, as far as prayer requests, it's already done, my friend. Clown world continues to get weird. As of writing this, the UK has backed off of COVID mandates and in almost the same breath sending troops and equipment to Ukraine. Guess they are thinking mandates are not conducive to getting people ready for war footing. In my circle, when I talk about how outclassed the US is, I hear more normie conservatives talk about using tactical nuclear weapons. And also, they seem to expect Russia would not respond. What? It's just a tactical nuclear weapon. They wouldn't nuke us back. People are crazy these days. Wish you best, Grandpa. Keep up the faith. You are helping us all out here, and I'm really impressed you've kept your sense of humor, your brother in Christ, Mike. And that is it is very much appreciated. I think about from a Christian perspective, and no, I'm not going to start preaching to y'all, but from a Christian perspective, I mean, it's basically laid out like these patterns, like when God is ready to like really just pour out his wrath on a country, it kind of causes everybody in that country just to kind of lose their minds. I kind of think that's what's going on here. I think the cup of wrath is all the way to the top and is going to spill over and get poured out. Hey, before we continue to rock on these subjects, just a quick update on the health thing. By the time the next show airs, if I pass all the pre-screening, by the time we sit down here next week, I should have had my surgery by then. So your continued prayers are very much appreciated. Please keep those coming. Okay, you know, I mean, it's always iffy, the idea of going under the knife, but Hopefully we'll have that done by the time we meet here next week. So I appreciate y'all keeping that in mind. No, they have lost their minds. People have lost their minds. This Russia thing is one of the most absolutely insane narratives. They really believe they can just create a reality. I don't know. And apparently a lot of it, I guess they're having success with it. I don't know. I mean, I don't believe it, but how many people do? I saw a story. I was talking about this. I saw just one of the most amazing, absurd story. I thought it was absurd. The projection when the UK came out and said that they were really fearful that what Russia was going to do was topple the government, the legitimate government of Ukraine, and install a puppet regime. When they came out and said that, in light of what the U.S. did in Ukraine in 2014, I thought maybe we had hit the pinnacle, but I was wrong. Because the other day I was watching the network news for just a few minutes. I torture myself in these ways so that I stay informed so that we can do these shows, the price I pay for you, the listeners. But I was watching network news and they were teasing the story. You know, of course, Russia and their aggressive action, massing troops on the border of Ukraine. They never say that what's on the other side of the Ukraine border. Well, it's Russia, because they would sound silly saying Russia is massing troops inside of its own country. How dare they? They're threatening our military bases all around the world by massing troops in their own country. But anyway, they say, well, with this Russian aggression, what does Putin want? What does Putin want? And I thought to myself, I have to watch this story. It's not very often that I actually want to watch a story on the network news, but I have to watch the story because I thought if they were doing the truth, which I knew they wouldn't, but I thought if they were to do the truth, well, the story wouldn't last 2 minutes because, you know, they've been very open. They released to the international media weeks ago what they wanted. No further NATO expansion. They don't want NATO on their border. But I knew the media couldn't report on that because there's no way to spin that where it doesn't sound like, well, where, you know, where people don't hear that and go, well, that sounds pretty reasonable. You know, we wouldn't want Russia toppling the Mexican government, putting a puppet regime there, and then setting up missiles across the Rio Grande. Wouldn't tolerate that at all. So they couldn't say that. But I thought it was so funny because Russia just, they had did this mass press release, the international media. This is what we want. This is what we are telling them in advance. There's nothing extra, nothing held out. This is what we're saying. So what does the media do in this story? It is so funny. They go out, I kid you not, they find this guy, this rando, who'd been kicked out of Russia after being convicted of fraud. So they find an ex-con who'd been kicked out of the country, convicted of fraud. This is their source to tell them. They never in the story explain to us why this guy knows. I guess being a ex-con convicted of fraud makes you an expert on Putin. But he was Russian-ish, I guess. So they go to this guy, this ex-con, and ask him what Putin wants. And shock of shocks, it just so happens to line up with everything the media and the government says Putin wants. He wants to rebuild the Soviet Union. Because, you know, he used to be in the KGB. I love how they drag that up, too. Putin was in the KGB. It's like whenever they bring up David Duke and they talk about he was a Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, lifetime superior leader of, you know, it's like the guys have been in the Klan since something like the 80s or something. He's done a few things since then. It's like that. They can't bring up Putin without saying he was in the KGB, you know, he was a KGB guy. And thus, because he was in the KGB, he wants to rebuild the Soviet Union, or as I always affectionately call it, the Soviet Onion. He wants to recreate the Soviet Onion. That's his motive. Never mind that they told everybody a couple, 3 weeks ago, well, this is what we want. Really just don't want y'all, you know, all up on our business like this. We don't want y'all up in our grill. You know what I'm saying? We don't want you up on our grill. Get up out of my grill. You're on my grill pointing missiles at me. And she, I tell you what, man. Can't have the reasonable explanation. We go find an ex-con to tell us that, yeah. And yeah, no, as the listener pointed out, you've got, no, it's worse. It's not just random normie cons. You got sitting Republican senators and stuff talking about, well, we need to have a first response. We got to have a nuclear, we got to let Russia know we're willing to nuke them out of the blue. Madness. Madness. Then God's lining up, pour that cup of wrath out on this shithole. I'm telling y'all, because everybody's gone insane. They know they can't win a conventional war. I thought it was funny. They sailed this carrier group and did a big tweet. Well, this is what freedom looks like. U.S. aircraft carriers going into the South America. No, not America. South China Sea to remind China that, by golly, we're America. And then they crash into the flop off the deck. It's just so telling. It just smack. Oh, well, our plane fell off into the ocean. But hey, America, buddy, we're ready. We're ready to take you Chinese on anytime. You Russians will take on you, both of you, because by golly, we're America. It's madness. It's just utter and complete madness. I was talking about this. Isn't it amazing that we're told that we have a free press in this country? You know, that's right. We got to have a free press. Free press doesn't mean you. You see, the First Amendment about free speech, that doesn't mean you. And remember that part with the founding fathers, like they were just basically ship posters. Now, they didn't have the internet. They ship posted on paper. Remember? And they would publish things like against the crown and stuff under fake names. They were using pseudo identities. They didn't have no frogs or nothing, but they had these other identities. They would post under these fake identities, you know, to protect themselves. And they were ship posting on paper and handing the papers out. No, that doesn't apply to you. They wrote the First Amendment, but they, even though what random people on the internet are doing now is the modern day version of what they themselves did. No, they didn't mean that. They didn't mean it to apply that way. You're just doing misinformation, which is anything that contradicts the narrative from the government. You see, no, what they meant was free speech means CNN, MSNBC, all of the network news outlets that just so happen to have the exact same view, the exact same narrative. Isn't it funny? We supposedly have this free press. We supposedly have this independent, fact-checking, available media, and all their views just so happen to perfectly line up with everything we're told from the government. I swear there must be a common denominator. Must be a common denominator somewhere between the media, the government. All of the narrative happens to just all perfectly line up and sync. Really, just to bear down on this for a minute, if you really had like all these independent media, if they were truly independent, I mean, one of them would step out of line. One of them would step way out of line and be like, wow, this is bullshit. All these other guys are wrong. I remember years ago, people would say, oh, no, the media can't be controlled because, you see, some reporter somewhere is going to want that Pulitzer Prize. He's going to want that Pulitzer Prize, and he's going to go break the story. But no, he's not, because it'll never get past the editor. And in fact, they probably just don't let people that have that mindset even get in. It's just ridiculous. Like some lone reporter has the power to say what's going to get put on TV. Our democracy and our values means that we have an independent press that just so happens to parrot everything that the government tells us. Remember, I'm old enough. I grew up in the Cold War, y'all. I grew up in the Cold War. If you would have told me back in the 80s that in current year I could get more factual information by going to Russian media, I would have said you're crazy. I would have said you were absolutely crazy. What do you mean? Because we have a free press that happens to all say the exact same thing. And don't think your local media. There was a thing going around years ago on the internet where somebody had took all these local news clips from all over the country, not just in the same city, all over the country. And they were all covering the same story. And they literally verbatim, word for word, said the exact same lines for each story. You know, I was sitting watching the local news the other day. And as usual, it was COVID, COVID, COVID. That's all we get to hear about. And I was thinking, because I don't even remember what it was. They were leading off with, the hospitals are overrun or ICU beds are at an all-time low or whatever the hell the doomsday virus narrative was at the time. And I thought to myself, where did the person reading this story to me on TV get this? Or did their reporters go out and do some investigative reporting to find out what's the current count in the ICU? No, well, somebody told them. And they didn't, Jay. They just turned around and parrot it back. They don't provide any context. They will say, well, 5 years ago, during a height of flu season, how many beds were available in the hospital and how is it different today? They don't do any of that. They just handed some information, comes over an email. I was going to say I was fixing to show my age because I almost said comes over the fax machine. I almost said fax machine. They get this stuff in the email. They print it off. They walk in there and they read it verbatim, word for word. This is how lazy, quote unquote, journalism is. The only real journalism, the only real free press going on is randos on the internet. And they've got to be shut down. They've got to be banned for misinformation. What's misinformation? Well, they're not relying on experts. No, look, these people are quoting these experts in the field. These are professors, doctors, virus experts. Well, no, they're the wrong kind of experts. They're spreading misinformation. Anything that goes against the narrative. It's not allowed. Not allowed. It's not a part of our democracy and in our values if you disagree with the current narrative. Oh, yeah. No, it is crazy. Yeah. The idea we're going to nuke Russia. Well, everybody knows. The only reason those people, these people talking about, you were talking about like normie cons and they're all the, God bless our military. God bless America. And it's so, we got the best military in the world. The only reason they're throwing the nuke term out there is because they're begrudgingly admitting that they know the military couldn't win conventionally. I saw the other day they're talking about, this alleged threat, Russia's fixing to do this, fixing to do that. And the Biden administration is getting prepared. They just might have 8,500 troops. 8,500 troops. They may move them in there just to hold them off. Now, they're claiming They're claiming that Russia's got over 100,000, around 100,000 troops massed at the border, ready to come swarming across into the Ukraine. And what, you're going to put 8,500? That's right, because 8,500 Americans. I tell you what, that equals 100,000 Ruskies any day. It's absurd. You just blow through that. They're just cannon fodder. It wouldn't even be collateral damage. It wouldn't even be a speed bump. And they're talking all this crap. We put 8,500. Now, these people throwing about, talking about nuclear weapons. Maybe we should just nuke Russia. They're begrudgingly admitting that they know the military couldn't win conventionally. Now, they can't keep that F-35. We'll launch our F-35 so we can keep them from crashing. Then they'll know. America. And believe it or not, I do. I try to be patient with these people. I was telling somebody here recently, I said, you know, look, when you're dealing with normal run-of-the-mill, like everyday conservatives, you're going to run into life. You know, it's easy to get frustrated with, but you got to remember, they do mean well. I mean, they mean well. If they're at least not promoting, I don't know, drag queen story hour or just out-and-out global homo stuff, I mean, to have some patience with them. It's difficult. I get it. I know. But you got to have patience, because these are generally the people you're going to wind up interacting with in life, hopefully, because it's better than interacting with soyjack, you know, shit libs. I mean, you know, for all their faults. But they are a fascinating bunch. They're a fascinating bunch. I always laugh because, the Second Amendment, you know, they'll take my guns when they pry it from my cold, dead finger. And the same people are like, I bleed blue because I back the police. And it's like, well, if the government decided to come get your guns, who do you think they're going to send? Salvation Army? No. People have this, normie cons have this really weird view. I've never understood badgering. No, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not like, I don't go around being like hostile to the police. Like I always found it cringe. Like, you'd see those videos. It was a thing here several years ago. And like, some cop stops somebody, you know, for speed or like a border checkpoint. Like, you're driving down in South Texas and you get stopped. They have these checkpoints on the road and they stop you. You know, and they're just checking to see if you have illegals, to see if you fit the profile to be smuggling drugs, see if you act funny. Maybe while they're talking to you, the other guy's walking the dog around your car. It is no big deal. And these people would be like, you know, they stop you. Well, we're stopping you at this border checkpoint. You don't have the right to do that. Well, we can do that. I just need to see your driver's license. Why do I have to show you my driver's license? I have the constitutional right to go through. And it was cringe. I'm sorry. I understand people were trying to make some kind of point, but it was just cringe. I would never do that. You got to pick your battles. You got to decide what's important. You know, if you're doing 10 miles over the speed limit and they pull you over, don't get a big attitude. Your ass knows you were going 10 miles over the speed limit. Don't be an asshole to the cop and think that that's going to make your day better, because it won't. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm not hostile in that way. I'm not, but I'm not a badge licker. I can't stand badge lickers. And you know what I'm talking about. If you see someone driving around with the American flag and the stripes instead of being red or blue, and they got the big dark blue stripe because we bleed blue, we love it. That's badge licking. People are just weird, twisted. And normie cons especially, you know, bless your hearts, you know, have this weird, twisted view of what the police job are. I mean, the role of the police, look, let me make this, the role of police, primarily what they do the vast majority of their time is collect revenue for the state. That's their number one job. I mean, you want to forget all this bullshit you see on TV where like the cops are running around trying to solve these crimes. No, they're running around trying to find somebody they can find to make money for the state. It's like every year, every month, at the end of the month, you see all these cops out on the street to write tickets to fill that quota that they say doesn't exist, but everybody knows exists. Their number one job is to collect revenue for the state. And if it comes down to it, their other job is to inflict violence on behalf of the state. If you step out of line far enough from the narrative, like I said, if they were to come for your guns, I don't think they're going to. They have no reason to. They got everybody going along with everything just fine. Why rock the boat? But if they were, they're going to send the police. They're going to send the police to inflict violence on you. If you threaten the government in any way, shape, or form, they're going to send the cops to push your shit in. But most of the time, their job is to collect revenue for the state. Feel like there's weird, and I think it's TV. I do. I think it's TV that creates this illusion. Prosecutors' jobs is not to get to the truth. You always see these ridiculous, like, Law and Order type shows, and the prosecution, they're building this case against this guy, and halfway through putting all of this work in, they realize it couldn't have been him. Wait, there's a question on here. There's a contradiction. I think our guy that we're fixing to convict isn't really the culprit. We got to reinvestigate the case and go find. That never freaking happens, people. Prosecutors' jobs is to get convictions. They won't give a shit if you're guilty or not. You know, I'm not trying to go all BLM here and say, oh, they're just intentionally putting people of color in jail. No, I'm telling you, a fact of life is prosecutors' jobs are to get to convictions, not to get to the truth. And if you get caught up in that system and you don't have money, you're doomed. They always make it, black people are victimized. No, poor people are victimized. If you're poor and black and you're poor and white, you're just as screwed if you get thrown into the judicial system. That's just how it is. It's a rich man's game. But that's getting off on another tangent. The role of prosecutors, truth has nothing to do with it. I remember there was a case, I don't remember which case it was because it was so many years ago. It was one of those high profile cases to where, you know, they had gotten a conviction on somebody. And, later on, it turned out, I mean, undeniably, the guy was innocent. I think it was like one of those DNA things. I mean, the guy was innocent. It was proven the guy was innocent. Moreover, they'd come to find out that before the guy was convicted, the prosecutors found out that the guy was and pretty much had a good idea. And they didn't matter. They convicted him anyway. That's their job. And then after all of this had come out, And the courts were getting, they'd gone to the prosecutor and asked the prosecutor, like, you know, hey, can you go ahead and go to the court and say, yeah, we screwed this up. And the prosecutor's like, no, in fact, I may appeal it. The courts were going to let this guy out. And the prosecutor's like, we may retry this guy. You caught red-handed. You convicted an innocent guy. You pretty much knew he was an innocent guy when you threw him in jail. And you still, well, I may appeal it. Why? Because that would mess up their conviction rate. Their job is to get conviction. Don't think some prosecutor is going to come across a piece of evidence that clears you of the crime and they're going to come out and say, oh, wait, stop, sorry. We're going to let you go. We found out it's this other guy. That ain't their job. Their job is to get convictions. And once they decide it's you, they're going to do everything they can to convict you. They like people having no clue. They like people having no clue. It's like we're always told about the freedom and the democracy and our values, and they never tell us what that is. You ever notice that? The democracy, our democracy. And it's, I continue, I say this every week. I laugh because all of these terms from Omicron to our democracy, our values, who we are, this stuff is so obviously run through marketing and focus groups. I mean, it's just obvious. Like you wake up one day and everybody on TV is saying the exact same line, our democracy, our values, who we are. Just like little parrots, our democracy, bruh. They ran that through a focus group. They ran that through a marketing firm, and they focus grouped it and said these terms are going to play the best. They're going to play the best with the public. But isn't it funny they never tell us what any of those things mean? You know, our democracy. What does our democracy mean? Really, what does it mean? They say our democracy is the pinnacle of government system in the world. It seems to be the most corrupt from where I sit. But nevertheless, our democracy is the height of existence, the height of being governed. This is what being governed looks like. We have our democracy. Our democracy, and it goes inside. What does our democracy do? It promotes our values and who we are. Okay, well, what are those things? Mumble, mumble, jumble, and gay anal. I don't know. They won't ever tell us. Because if our democracy, as it kind of implies from the term, if our democracy means that like we have a say in government policy, I haven't seen them floating any polls around about how gung-ho a people in America are with skyrocketing inflation, a collapsing infrastructure, and a society that's falling apart. I haven't seen any polls that how much Americans are all hyped for war in Ukraine with Russia. I haven't seen any polls to tell us how much of the public of the United States gives a shit about Ukraine. Isn't it supposed to be our democracy? It's implied that the people have some sort of say. It's so corrupt. It's so corrupt. There was a story the other day. They were sending the Biden out to, I think, Pennsylvania to do some speech about, you know, the infrastructure plan. And on the day he went out there, this bridge had like a dusting of snow. It looked like a dusting of snow from the pictures. And it collapsed. They said, well, it's heavy snow. I mean, maybe it was heavy earlier. I don't know. But in the picture, there wasn't that much snow on it. But it doesn't matter. It's supposed to be built for that. It's in Pennsylvania. It snows there. What's so funny is they say, oh, we got a $1 trillion infrastructure plan. Like, this is the first time they did a big infrastructure plan when Obama was in there. And how much better did the roads get? They didn't. We all know this country is so corrupt. They talk about Ukraine. You know, Ukraine is just this bed of corruption. Like, you send $1 billion to Ukraine for, say, this is to train their army and their military to stop the Russian invasion. Everybody knows, like, you're going to get like $20 go to the army, and that's going to go in somebody's pocket. But where did all the rest of the $1 billion go? It went in everybody's pocket because the whole damn thing is corrupt. And this country ain't no better. It ain't no better. It just operates on a bigger scale. You know, you used to hear the story, like, you go to Mexico and the cop would stop you. You know, you could go in, like, many years ago, you'd go through like a town in Mexico and there'd be like one bridge to go into this town, and you'd be in the bridge and there'd be a cop in the middle of the bridge, and you get in the middle of the bridge and you stop and the cop walks up and he just looks at you. Well, everybody knew that you're supposed to give the cop like $20 to go across the bridge. And people say, ah, look how corrupt the Mexicans are. They're just so corrupt. No, they were just out in the open. It's just a small scale. Who cares if you give $10, $20 to the cop? Here, they spend $1 trillion on infrastructure, and everybody knows ain't no roads going to get fixed. Ain't no bridges going to get fixed. They've done this before. Infrastructure. That's such a nice, vague term. It's like when they say, we're allocating $1 billion to education. What does that mean? I mean, it sounds good. You say, oh, yeah, I'm for education. I don't want dumbass kids running around. But what does that mean? Well, they don't ever tell us. What it means is it's going to go in all the right pockets. This group gets some and this group will study. And you know, when you read these stories about ludicrous studies, like, you know, $2 million was spent to, I don't know, discover the life cycle of a larva. You see, that was done in a university. It's education money. The money just goes into people's pockets. Most of it goes in the right pockets. The bridges ain't going to get fixed. The roads ain't going to get any better. This is a corrupt and collapsing society. The corruption is so bad now. I referenced earlier, you know, they sailed the carriers into the South China Sea to bully China as if. And there was one carrier, one of the first ones, if not the first one, had the F-35. And it crashes the first day. The thing's a boondoggle. Read up on it. It's a boondoggle. They've spent like $1 trillion on this piece of shit and nobody wants to fly it. Doesn't do anything very well. It's a piece of crap. It's a smoldering piece of crap. But Lockheed Martin's gotten rich off of it. They've done real well. All the lobby, everybody has done really well. But unfortunately, at the end of the day, you were supposed to have this airplane that was going to be this whiz bang thing. And it's a flaming pile of shit. Nobody wants it. It's a corrupt society. You just the bribes go in. At the end of the day, you got an airplane, so you spend all this money, and for an airplane, you got an airplane. Doesn't do anything very well, but you got one, and it's all connected. You know, I mean, the military is connected to all of it. It's like the enforcement arm of the corruption. It's like when the U.S. went into Afghanistan, the first thing they did was secure the poppy fields so we get that opium flowing. CIA's lined in their pockets with this. Everybody knows. Everybody's known for years. How come we can't win the war on drugs? Because all these people that are supposedly tasked with our security, our national security, and fighting this are lining their pockets with it. It's corrupt. And it's not a bug. It's a feature. It's not a bug. This is the way the system's designed to work. It's all collapsing. It's all falling apart. Point these things out, but it's our democracy. It's our values. It's something to keep in mind here. Tax season, you know, you got to pay your taxes. Look at how much you pay. Even if you paid in all year, you know, and you don't have to write a big check, You can sit there and look, though, at that total amount, and this is how much you paid, and what of their agenda. You would think, if you were putting money into the system, you would think you would have some form of say in what they do with it. But you don't. You don't. And more and more, the government is demonizing its own citizens. This is just a telltale sign when, like, a regime, when a system is teetering on the brink of collapse. When they start demonizing the very people that they're supposedly supposed to be governing. You know, when they're just, the number where they came out with yet the six millionth statement from Homeland Security saying these domestic terrorists are the biggest threat and they're going to do something. These domestic terrorists, they're all out there. And we all know who that is. These ill-defined supremacist groups or whatever. They're all fixing to do something. When they have to start demonizing their own population, when they are making it very clear. How do you know a government, a system is utterly corrupt and knows it? You know, they know it. When they become fixated on the threat posed by their own population. Because you think about it, your own population isn't a threat to themselves. It's not like the people, they're worried that, you know, a segment of the population wants to basically kill themselves or something. So what is the threat? When they say, oh, these extremist groups are this growing threat, a threat against whom? Are they going to go around and target their fellow citizens for some vague unknown reason? Well, no, that doesn't make any sense. It's a threat to them. Now, if this is the democracy in our system, that would imply that if they're worried about the citizens turning their violence towards them, then, you know, that ought to be a wake-up call and say, well, hey, we're doing something wrong. We're supposed to be governing over these people. It's supposed to be our democracy and our values. And if we're having to be worried that they're going to turn violent against us, then maybe we ought to listen to that and do something different. They don't do that. Because I don't really think they're implying that they're just, you know, you're going to have this violence erupt where citizens are against citizens and this and that. It may come to that as, you know, things become more chaotic. But really, they say they pose the biggest threat, but they never say to who. Well, the answer is to them. Of course, it's all made up bullshit anyway. But if you take them at their word, when they say domestic terrorists, in other words, the citizens of the country, are the greatest threat. They pose the greatest threat to the U.S. This country, they're the greatest threat we face right now. Who's we? Who's we? Well, they mean them. They mean they're afraid. And I don't think it's a reality. It's something they've created of themselves to target the system. But the point is, and we got to wrap up to get in our Christian-specific segment. But the point is, when a government becomes so focused and fixated and concerned about their own citizens, the people they're supposed to be ruling over, they're losing it. They're losing the plot. You know, if you're running a country and you have to be worried that the citizens just might any day come burn your shit up, you know, you saw them all freaking out on the January 6th, you know, the pictures of them all running and cowering and putting bags over their heads and hiding under seats. You know, that's not somebody standing up like, hey, what's y'all's problem? You know, we represent you. Why are you doing this? No, they're running because they know deep down inside. They're like, they're afraid that the day had come to pay the toll for all the crap they're doing. No, it's when a government gets to the point to where they're so concerned and worried about their own citizens, it's an admission, it's a tacit admission that they're utterly corrupt, they don't represent the people, and they know it. And they're concerned that they're not going to be able to continue to bamboozle everybody into going along. They're really worried about that. That's a reflection of that. It's just a reflection of how worried they are about it. I don't know. I mean, it looks like everybody's going along pretty well. I'm not even sure why they're as paranoid as they are. But then again, maybe there's something to that. I don't know. But it is a sign of that. It's a sign that they know deep down inside that they are democracy and all of that is just bullshit. They know they don't represent the people. They know the system is utterly corrupt. And something deep down inside is telling them this can't go on forever. What else can't go on forever is this first part of the show. We got to get into the Christian specific message. You like that? Like the way I just segued into that? That, ladies and gentlemen, is a sign of a broadcasting professional. You know what to do. Let's get in there. Let's fill those pews. Let's get into this week's Christian specific, the sermon this week. That's right, here at the Parish of the Patriots. So as we get settled in this week, I was kind of sitting here just pondering, debating, you know, what do we talk about? It's sometimes harder than you think it is to come up with a Christian-specific discussion every week. I mean, we're on episode 154. What should we talk about? But thankfully, no, we're not going to run out of things to talk about. I mean, we do this segment. If you are new around here, again, this particular part, this message we do, this segment is geared towards people who are already Christian believers. I mean, I always say anybody will get something out of it, whether you believe or not, but it is geared that way. So one would do well to bear that in mind. So I'm sitting here thinking about, you know, what to discuss this week. And I thought we would kind of discuss it. And I guess before we get into it, I should say that I'm having a bit of trouble keeping all of my thoughts lined up, and I apologize if things haven't been rolling on the show last several 3 or 4 weeks, whatever, as smoothly as they usually do. I mean, I sometimes just completely lose my train of thought, and it's really hard. And I've read where that could be a side effect of what I've got going on. But I think, honest to goodness, I think the truth is it is probably more to do with the fact that you've got stuff weighing on your mind, and you can shut that off as best you can, but it's still there in the background. And I think this causes some of this. I call it, you know, I get fuzzy in my head sometimes. I'm rolling along and I'm on a point, and then I'll stop for a second, and then I completely lost where I was at. So bear with me. And with that in mind, I may kind of repeat on some stuff that we've touched on before. But I think all in all, we can get into it this week. We will read a little bit from our Bibles. We're going to do that here in a bit. I thought we'd just discuss a little bit about what are we doing here. And I don't mean this show. I mean, what are we as Christian believers? I mean, what are we doing here? What is our life about? Because, I mean, that's always kind of the ultimate question, isn't it? Because, I mean, some point in time, you're going to die. And when you, if you have an advanced notice of that, if you have an advanced notice of that, you're going to start wondering, well, what have I been doing? I think a good mental exercise for all of you, it would be to take a couple of days. I mean, you don't have to like 24/7 for 2 days, but I'm just saying, take a couple of days and just put it in your mind. Like, you're told, hey, you have X amount of time to live. Whatever, 6 months, 3 months, whatever, it doesn't matter. But just your time is now. I mean, we know our time is finite in this world, but just set an actual, just do a mental exercise. Imagine you're told you have X amount of time. I mean, here, you know, yeah, we all know we're going to die someday. But no, for you, in this amount of time, your time is up. You've got the hourglasses flipped over, sand is running out. Now start thinking about it. And start thinking about, what am I doing? What is this? What has this been all about? As you do so, go easy on yourself, because more than likely you're going to be kind of disappointed. Because the truth is, the answer for pretty much all of us is, well, I worked. I worked a lot. Tried to do the best I can to provide for my family. You know, tried to do this and provide a home and food, and it can be kind of depressing. But the truth of the matter is, none of us are going to do great things. That's just how life is. So I always say one of my favorite, if not my favorite book of the Bible, is Ecclesiastes, because it really kind of tackles this question in a nutshell. And the conclusion of the teacher in Ecclesiastes is basically, be as happy as you can in the limited time you have here. Be happy in your work. Try to find a way to be happy and find satisfaction in the work that you do, because the days are short. And then you're going to die. And then you won't have any partaking of that which is done under the sun. You know, life is short. Do your best. Try to just find some happiness. This is eat, drink, and be merry, and be happy in the life that you have and the work of your hands, because your days are short. But look back over your life and think about, okay, if you have X amount of time left, I mean, what would you do different with that time that you're not doing now? I mean, And then I guess the question is, you know, as you ponder, what would I be doing different if I knew I only had, say, 3 months left to live? What would I be doing different in that 3 months that I haven't been doing the whole rest of my life? And I think this can add, this is an interesting question, because on some of, you know, depending on what your answer is, then the next question is, well, how come you haven't been doing that so far? If you would do this different, you said, well, if I only had 3 months to live, well, I would go ahead and live it out. I would do this differently. Well, then why haven't you been doing it that way up to now? We all get stuck in a rut. We get stuck in our habits. you know, our day-to-day grind. And pretty soon it's like we've created a jail for ourselves, you know, and we've created a jail for ourselves. We're just living in this rut and this routine, and it's not really living. It's one of those things, you know, as you go through this, I mean, I can't tell you what answers you'll find, but I think it is a good, and I think it's honestly a healthy mental exercise to just take a few days to reflect and ponder. You know, as you go about your routine, like I say, you can't spend all day thinking about it, but just have it in your mind that you have X amount of days left. What would you do different? What would you see differently? How would you live the rest of those days? And if it's drastically different than how you're living now, why? Why would it be different when it comes to dealing with death? I think death is like the final exam. You know, I mean, we're like in school. This time on this earth is like our spiritual school. This is where we're supposed to learn. We're supposed to grow. We're supposed to get to this point, and at some point, we will graduate. Nobody stays in high school forever. You graduate high school and go on with the rest of your life. Yeah, we fight tooth and nail to stay in high school. We'd want to be 40 years old and still going to prom. Still going to prom. And with our attitude that we have sometimes about these things. This life is school. This life is your opportunity to get your spiritual education to grow so that when you finally move on from this realm, you're ready to go on and continue to grow. You can get the rest of your real life started. Yet we fight it. We fight it tooth and nail. I mean, it's instinct. It's instinct to want to keep living. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying there's something wrong with that. But I think it's important to keep things in perspective. Nobody wants to stay in high school forever. Again, for the heathen and the godless and those who don't believe, I mean, yeah, they have every reason to just freak out at the idea of death. Because if you really honestly believe in your heart that this is it, and then after that, you just gasp your last, cease to exist, and you know that's it, then yeah, that'd be a pretty big downer. But yet too often as Christian believers, you know, when we face this final exam, you know, we face the final exam, you've built on your faith. And this is why another reason too, it's so important to build on your faith your entire life, because it will be called upon. You know, we always think, oh, well, you know, like we picture something happening like for the early church, you know, from the early church, like the government's going to round us up and say, denounce Jesus Christ, or we're going to throw you in this dungeon, in this prison. And you're like, no, I won't do that. And we picture it being something like that when our faith is called upon. But it's not necessarily. I mean, it's satanic clown world, so I guess it could, but not necessarily. But your faith will be called upon. Because at some point in time, if you get advanced notice, you're going to get the word that, you know, you're going to become aware that death is coming soon. Even if you don't get told, hey, you have this many times to live. I mean, if you wake up one day and you're really old, I mean, you're going to know death's a lot closer than it was before. And it's coming for us all. And in that, your faith will be tried. I mean, the older you got to take the final exam. Out of this life. And that final exam is you face death. You face death. And how does that faith? That's when your faith is called upon. You've built this faith. That's why you got to build your faith, folks. It is going to be called upon. You don't think it will, but it will. If the day comes and they tell you have this much time and you're going to die, you're going to be looking to your faith reserves, and you didn't build up no faith reserves, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. You might have gone to church every Sunday. You might have talked to people and said, yes, I love the Lord. And you might have withheld yourself from using profanity and try to live a really upright life. And good on you. I'm not belittling that. Good on you. But you didn't build any faith. And now they look at you and tell you, you're going to die. And you're like, oh, my God. God, where are you? Well, oh, why is God doing this to me? No, 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 no. And you lose it. You don't have any battery. You don't have any faith. It all goes out the window. I'm warning you, at some point in time, your faith is going to be called on. You'll be able to be building up some reserves. Your faith is grown primarily in struggle. When you're going through life, if you're going through life and every, you know, you figure you got a lot of days ahead of you, and that's all good. And right now, you're going through some really shitty time. You're really struggling financially. You're having problems. It seems like the world's against you, and you're trying to hold on, and you're praying, and you're trying to build your faith. Take heart. That is how you're building your faith reserve. You're going to need it. Your faith isn't generally built up when everything's hunky-dory and going great. How much is the faith of the rich man who doesn't have a care in the world? Well, I would say he doesn't have much faith because his faith is in his money. You know, he hasn't been tried. He hasn't had to struggle. He hasn't had to rely on God's help. He hasn't had to. He hasn't been in desperation and praying, God, you're the only hope I've got. How am I going to get through this? No, he's got money in the bank. But at some point, you'll have to call upon your faith. If at some point they tell you, you have this much time left to live, you better have something in the faith bank. Otherwise, it all goes out the window. Otherwise, it all goes out the window. As Christian believers, I think one of the saddest things, I really do, I think one of the saddest things would be to go through life as a believer and, you know, proclaiming, you know, believing in the name of the Lord and believing as Christ as your Lord and Savior, then getting confronted with the reality that it's time soon to leave this world, and then having all of that fall apart. You know, all of a sudden it's like, no, why, no, I want to live forever right here on this on this rock. This I want to stay in clown world. People have asked me, you know, with what I'm going through, you know, what are you really, you know, like, well, what's one of the things that really worries you and concerns you? Well, many things. But if, like, worst case scenario comes around, or quote unquote worst case scenario comes around, and, you know, I just want to hold on to the faith. I want to finish strong. I want to keep my head up and finish the race, as Paul says. You know, I want to finish the race. I want to cross that finish line with my head up, holding on to the faith, living as I should be, you know, living as, you know, a man of God, as a child of God through Christ Jesus. And that should be everybody's goal. I think that should be the attitude of all of us. Too often Christian believers, when it comes to the final exam, they lose it. Imagine being an A student. You know, an A student through school, and then, you know, okay, we've got to take this final exam, and then you can walk across the stage and get your diploma, and then the final exam comes along, and you just absolutely lose it. You know, like maybe you have a student that all through school, they got really good grades. Why? Well, because they were just good at memorizing the material, but they didn't actually learn the material. They just memorized it in the short term so that they could pass all the tests. But see, now you got the final exam, and it goes back and calls on everything you've learned the entire time you were in school, and they can't remember because they were just remembering it short term long enough to fill out the test and look really good. But now they ain't got nothing to call on. They don't have any actual knowledge. They didn't actually learn the material. Now they're taking the final exam, and they fall all apart because they don't have any actual knowledge to draw from. This is what we've got to avoid. Again, you got to take heart when you're going through struggles, when you're going through times of trial and things are really crappy. We all hate that. Nobody should sit here and pretend like it's all good. Pretend like it's good because, you know, you're building your faith. I mean, yes, you are building your faith, but we all hate it. It sucks. I mean, nobody likes, you know, hard times. But it might make it a little easier to get through those hard times, to realize and really remember that this is how your faith grows. This is what will drive you to pray and to try to get closer and to understand God and to try to hear his voice in some way, shape, or form, and try just to get a little closer to see through the veneer of this temporal reality that we live in, to peek into the eternal somehow, desperately, through trial. If you're having a good time and everything's going smooth, you don't really have time for that. You're not too worried about it. Understand, you are building your faith reserves, and you're going to need them at some point. At some stage of life, you are going to need to call on those reserves. So often I think as believers, we get caught in a rut of sweating the little things. You know, really try not to sweat the little things. A little thing. I think back before global homo clown world encroached and subverted the church, you know, and you have all these different denominations. You know, you go to any small town, you would have, you know, the Catholic Church and Baptists, Church of Christ, Methodists, Lutherans, and all of these different denominations. And you would have denominations that were like hardcore. Like if you're not a part of our particular denomination, if you're across the street in that other church, they're all going to hell because they use musical instruments and we don't. It's laughable because they get hung up on little things. People get hung up on these little things. You know, the Bible tells us, and I actually had this originally jotted down as a topic of its own, you know, where we're told, you know, that those who have more faith should be patient and bear with those whose faith is weak. You know, and we should have that attitude. I opted not to do that as a discussion today. But you know, even if you think that, you know, well, this view of how we're supposed to be performing our Christian duties is correct and theirs is incorrect. I mean, perhaps a more proper way to look at it instead of everybody over in that church is doing the exact same thing and believes the exact same thing as me, but in this one little area, they do something different, are all going to hell. Instead of thinking like that, maybe you should think of, well, their faith is a little weaker than mine, and I should bear with that. When you look at the sad, sad overall state of the church in the West today. I mean, look, you know, if your preacher isn't performing homosexual weddings and doing drag queen Sunday school, you probably ought to be happy. If your church isn't flying the flag of a foreign nation out front and telling you that God doesn't really love you, he loves these people on the other side of the planet, and that's why you should be thrilled to send all of your money over there. If you're not getting that message, you know, you probably can iron out the rest of the details. I don't know what the rest of it is. You get hung up on the little things, though. I think back, like I say, I think back to the difference we had. All that you go to, you have any little town, and you have all these different denominations, and everyone thinks they are absolutely 100% correct. And when you get down to the bottom of it, their differences in worldview, their differences in their Christian views were very, they were minuscule. You'd have this big conflict. It's like, well, what's your difference? You know, what is your different view? Well, the Sabbath is Saturday, not Sunday. Everybody knows that. Look at the calendar. Seventh day is Saturday. It's not Sunday. The rest of you are going to hell because you're doing it on worshiping God on a separate day. Little things. We hung up on little things. You know, and it's just really highlighted because things are so bad right now. You know, you read these stories, you know, and we've all seen it, and where churches have just gone chasing completely after the things of this world. Is it a church or is it a gay orgy on Saturday night at a nightclub somewhere? I don't know. The lines have become so blurred. So, yeah, we shouldn't, you know, when it comes to little things, don't get all hung up on that. We got big things going on. It's funny because if you can set aside sweating little things and getting hung up, and I think this is a personal thing for me. It doesn't really necessarily even have anything to do with Christian faith. But, you know, if you're really confident in your worldviews or in your views, you should always be open to looking at other views that challenge that because, you know, you can come to a greater understanding. Anyway, and having an attitude like that allows you to look at other views, like with your Christian faith and how other, say, denominations or sects or whatever you want to say of Christianity believe. And you can kind of gain a greater understanding. You might not agree with everything, you know, in their view, but it can, you know, it can help you to really, like, you know, put what you do believe in a greater context and actually wind up, you know, reaffirming what you believe. I mean, obviously, as Christian believers, you know, Christ crucified is the center of our belief. Everything extends out from that. Salvation comes from Christ crucified, resurrected. Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. Everything starts with that. And yes, there are probably churches out there saying, well, not necessarily. You know, that's the core. That is the center. You know, if you think of the solar system and the sun's in the middle, that is the center. Everything else starts coming out, you know, in orbits around that. Now, for instance, just an example of this, just as an example of how you can look at other, you know, other people's views and things such as that and say, well, yeah, I agree with this part or whatever. You know, I get asked all the time, well, are you Christian identity? Are you CI? You know, well, have I sat around and really, you know, gotten into that and I'm hard? Well, no. But as far as Christian identity, do I think the Jews of today are the children of Abraham or the Israelites of the Bible? Well, no, because it says in the Bible itself, we're told multiple times Jesus himself said, you're not the children of Abraham. It says it multiple times. Well, y'all aren't. You're usurpers. You're usurpers. You're coming in here trying to be. Oh, look! You've taken over. You've subverted your way into these roles, and now you're playing this role. You're not the children of Abraham. You're not. It says that clearly in the Bible. So no, I mean the Jews of today are not. You know, the ancient Israelites. I mean, that's clear. That's very well spelled out, and that is backed up by what's in our Bibles. Do I want to get hung up then on some idea that, well, just because I'm white, I'm automatically saved and a Christian believer? Well, no, you've got to get back to Christ crucified. That's the center. Everything orbits out from that. You know, I mean, it's fine to look at the actual history and say, well, you know, what we're told, I mean, these were white people, but I mean, that's history. That is a fact. That is truth. That is something to be preserved. I don't like the idea of falling into a mindset of if I'm white, I'm automatically saved and I'm going to heaven, because that strays away from Christ crucified. And I'm not saying that, you know, Christian identity believers do that. I'm just saying that, you know, this is always that we should never lose sight of what's supposed to be in the center. But again, something, a view that would be tagged with Christian identity is that the Jews of today are not the ancient Israelites, the children of Abraham in the Bible. And I 100% agree with that. That's backed up in the Bible itself. Like I say, there's multiple instances where Jesus himself pointed this out. I guess the point being, and I'm looking at the time, and I really want to read, because it's not much Bible reading for today, and I do want to get into it. I thought it would be a good thing to read today. Kind of to wrap all of this up. But the point being is, don't be afraid to look at what these other Christian believers believe, you know, the nuances that they have. Again, don't be afraid. You might incorporate something and help actually. It's not necessarily, in other words, I guess I want to say, if your views get challenged and hold up, they can also get strengthened because you realize, well, some of what they're saying, some of what this denomination, these believers are saying, I hadn't thought of that before. And you know what? I thought originally that contradicted with my views, but actually it doesn't. And it actually reinforces my view. And now I have a bigger view. I have a bigger picture. Does that make sense? We shouldn't be afraid. I mean, you can't be afraid. You got to be constantly trying to grow. That is our purpose here. You're supposed to be challenged. You're supposed to be constantly trying to grow. I thought of all things, and this is a short, we'll read the whole thing. It's short. It's the 23rd Psalm. Everybody's familiar with it. They usually read these at funerals, by the way. By the way, and it gets read through and it's supposed to make everybody feel better because, you know, funerals are for the people attending. The guy in the box doesn't care. He's not there. But this always gets read at funerals. But everybody just kind of sits there. You're busy crying and weeping and stuff. And it just kind of gets read through and not really, I don't think, necessarily always reflected on. So I thought we'd just kind of work our way through the 23rd Psalm before we wrap up today. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. I read that. And, you know, I've always read that or heard that. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. And I always thought of it as, you know, he causes you. He causes you to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth you beside the still waters. Well, this could be a problem because if you're thinking, you know, well, you know, he's supposed to be doing this for me. He's supposed to make me lie down in the green pastures, and he's supposed to be leading me by the still waters. And if your life isn't very green pasture-ish, not feeling any green pastures, you're like, well, why isn't God doing that? I was thinking how an interesting take would be to read it as he maketh me to lie down in green pastures. In other words, he created you to lie down in green pastures. You weren't made to live with a chaotic mind. You weren't made to be scrambling around and not know what's going on and to be afraid and scared and over here and over there and what's going to happen, and the sky is falling and oh my gosh, I'm going to die, and then what? Then what's going to happen? He made you to have a peaceful mind. He made you to have a peaceful spirit. A solemn and peaceful spirit. He made you. He created you to lie down in green pastures. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. He restoreth my soul. Sometimes, you know, I always say you should put, I say this every week, you should have some time set aside to seek God, to try to get closer to him. And I've found in my life that so often it's time. I kind of have a time set aside when I do that. And so often I go to do that and I really just don't feel like it. You know, I really don't feel like it, but I make myself do it anyway. And by the time it's done, but like I might say, okay, I'm trying to spend like 5-10 minutes anyway because I got things to go do. And I'm going to read a little bit out of my Bible, try to say some prayers. And all of a sudden, things will get on a roll spiritually. And I'm praying and my spirit's moving, the Holy Spirit. I feel like the Holy Spirit is moving inside. Next thing I know, I'm 20 minutes and I don't want to stop. He restoreth my soul. You see, if you seek him, he will restore your soul. You'll recharge your batteries. You'll get refocused on where you want to be. But you've got to try. The devil's going to try. This world's going to try to distract you from doing that, to keep you from doing that. So I would say, even if you're not feeling it, try to do it because he will restore your soul. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff comfort me. I'm going to tell you something. We're all walking through the valley of the shadow of death. This life is, by definition, temporal. It is temporary. Every single one of you, listen, I'm going to tell you one thing is a word of truth. Every single one of you is going to die. unless Jesus Christ comes right about the time the show airs and everybody gets transferred into, you know, the veil gets lifted and we all morph into the spiritual realm, every one of you is going to die. Because and even at that, at the end of the day, it's not really a difference. You are going to leave this realm. Every one of you is walking through the valley of the shadow of death. You can get in your car and run to the supermarket to buy a dozen of eggs and get hit in the intersection and killed right in the next 30 minutes. You are walking through the valley of the shadow of death. This mortal body is going to die. And yet, as I say, I will fear no evil. Now understand, evil in the biblical term is not wickedness. It's just bad things happening. Again, you were made, he created you, to lie and still in green pastures, to walk by the side of the still waters. Fear no evil. No bad thing happening. Not wickedness. No evil. Don't fear the bad things happening to you. For thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff comfort me. Let's continue on. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. You will have victory over your enemies. I hate it. I hate it that the church never talks about you're supposed to have victory over your enemies. He prepareth a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You see, there, your enemies are sitting on the outside looking at you feasting in there. Obviously, it's an example. But your enemies, you will overcome them. They tried to kill you. They tried to destroy you. They tried to ruin your life. And guess what? At the end of the day, at the victory, he prepareth a table for you. He prepares the table for you. And your enemies have to watch. They have to watch and see you elevated. Victory over your enemies. He's preparing a table. Your enemies might crush you in this life. These children of the devil, these servants of Satan, they're doing the work of their father. They might try to destroy your life. They might try to wreck you. They might try to drown you. They might try to trod you underfoot. They come up with every evil plot, every evil scheme. But guess what? At the end of the day, death's coming for them too. Remember how I said we're all walking through the valley of the shadow of death? They are too. And at some point in time, we win. At some point in time, they're going to have to look and see, oh, a table's been prepared for me, and they're locked on the outside in the darkness. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And that's the end of it. And I would just point out, surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Understand that it doesn't mean that everybody else is going to be good and merciful to you, because they're not. Can't be a contradiction of reality and what's written here. You see, goodness and mercy will follow you. You see, it is what you are leaving. It's following you because it's what's behind you. It's what's leaving, what you are leaving behind. In other words, this is the way you have lived your life. Because you can't read that and be like, you see, everybody, goodness and mercy. I'm going to experience nothing in life but goodness and mercy. Well, that's a lie. You're going to experience a lot of things that are not going to be classified as goodness and mercy. You know, the goodness and mercy follows you. In other words, that's what you leave in your wake. You know, people that leave nothing but destruction in their wake, they go through and they come into your life at like a hurricane and they tear everything up and then they're gone and they just leave a wake of destruction. Wake of destruction in your life. That's not you. You're going to leave it. You should be leaving a wake of goodness and mercy in your life. That's, in other words, the goodness and mercy comes from you. That's what you leave. That's what people are left with from you. Those around you. That is what you have left in your wake. And of course, finally, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And that is what is promised to us as Christian believers. We got to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of the show this week. That's always my hope. So I am glad you joined us this week. Plan to be here next week. We'll see how things go. But yeah, be sure and join us next week. And I always try to be on Fridays with Sven Longshanks for the Daily Nationalist. It's always a fun time, short show. So if you haven't caught that, be sure and catch that as well. And we'll be back next week. That's the plan. So we'll see you right here for the Parish of the Patriots.